Today is Wednesday. It's October 16th, 2024. Hokey Smokes, it's 2:44 in the afternoon. Let's get rolling. I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals podcast, the podcast for people who care about Chicago. You can hear me weekdays on WGN from 10 to 2.
I'm Marge Halperin. I draw on decades of experience as a communications consultant, a journalist, and a government reform worker doing what I can to challenge authority.
I'm Kate Plies, former Chicago reporter columnist, now doing the Chicago history website, Roseland Chicago 1972.
And I'm Eric Zorn, publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a weekly Substack newsletter, and former columnist at the Tribune.
I said 2 weeks ago, the most alarming thing about the vice presidential debate was J.D. Vance saying that Donald Trump had the courage to ignore the experts and use common sense about the climate and COVID and the economy. It was his common sense and courage, he said, that guided him. He would not be bothered with expertise. Yesterday, at a jarringly receptive economics club meeting in Chicago, Trump said that tariffs is the most beautiful word in the English language. It's his answer to everything, maybe because it's easy to comprehend. Charge foreign companies a prohibitive tax on their exports. Make it so expensive, they won't be able to compete here. If they want to sell to Americans, they'll have to produce it in the U.S. So no more outsourcing for us. And prices won't go up because, I don't know, but they won't go up. And when he talked like this, the crowd more than once applauded and laughed in approval. Yet economists, the experts, and history insist that this is not so. And I'm wondering today how embarrassed the Economics Club of Chicago is. When Trump referenced Barack Hussein Obama, the crowd laughed. They're staging Trump's dubious policy and lies with ineffective, though valiant, pushback gave Trump yet another day and another way to persuade people that that which is not true is.
I share that view, John. I think that these business people in the crowd, most of whom are fairly smart about business, are realizing that tariffs, when you increase tariffs to the extent that Trump is talking about, up to 2,000%, he was saying, that yes, you may have some companies that stop importing, but we import somewhere around $3 trillion worth of goods from around the world every year. And prices on all those items, or most of those items, is going to go up. Because we'll get involved in a trade war. You can't just say to a country like, well, we're going to raise tariffs to 2,000% or whatever he wants to do, and they're not going to fight back. They're not going to say, okay, then when you send your goods, you want our people to buy your goods, those prices are going to go up. I think these business people realize that the effect is going to be inflationary and is going to be a disaster for consumers. And Trump, when he's talking like that, first of all, he's talking to someone who is the editor at Bloomberg, who knows his stuff,
yeah,
and knows about tariffs, and talks to experts about it. And you're talking to basically a guy who is half in the bag at the end of the bar, bellowing about tariffs that he doesn't know anything about, and he keeps insisting that he knows more than the moderator. And that's Trump. But the people in the audience should have been restive about this. They should have been murmuring and booing and hissing. I mean, this is not good for them. And I don't understand why they sat there the way they did and why they applauded and laughed when they did.
We don't know who was in the audience exactly. I mean, I think you have to be a member of the Economic Club or know someone who...
They were allowed to bring a guest, yeah.
So I don't know. But from the moment he walked into a standing ovation, my jaw dropped. It took a while to pick it up. And he had the same kind of rambling he always does, the weave. What is he confuses what's on the top of his head with what's inside it or something? I don't know. But weave
not
is
bad.
He got that phrase. It's rambling is what the rest of us call it. But, you know, he monopolized the conversation by telling these long narratives that were dialogues, imaginary dialogues with people. Oh, what about that guy who builds automotive plants? He's only building them in Mexico. I'm sorry, sir. We don't build them in the United States anymore. When he says, sir, you know it's a lie. That is definitely one of his tells. Go back and check. And then he says, well, the guy, his name is John. Oh, that was quick. I mean, some people really are named John, but it is a name that pops into his head. It just sounded fake from the beginning. And the moderator could not stop him. It tried a few times, reminded him, well, you're still talking about the Fed now, but you've moved into foreign policy, or you're talking about nuclear energy, and we asked you about a tariff. Like, he could not stay on subject. And as Eric said, the audience just ate it all up.
One of his opening statements was, on his way in to the venue, he went by a shuttered steel mill or something like that. And I thought, I know where he was staying, Trump Tower. I know where he spoke, just down the street. In fact, out my studio window, I could see where they blocked off the roads for his motorcade. And I thought, I'm pretty sure there's not a steel mill on Columbus Avenue. I'm almost positive of it. I park on Columbus Avenue. I never go by a shuttered steel mill.
He came in at Midway, because I watched his motorcade come up that Batcave Road, you know,
yeah,
that is alongside the track. So, yeah, no, he didn't.
If he was looking way east, he might have seen a steel mill.
It was really flabbergasting, because I'm always a little surprised when I hear, both this time and the last couple of times that Trump ran, that the stock market's going up when they think Trump is going to win. And I always say to my husband, why? Why would they think that that means things are going to go well and we should all be buying more stocks? And he always says, because they know that he plans to lower taxes, cut taxes. And I say, all right, of course, yes, you're right. We all know he plans to cut taxes on wealthier people. So this is why they find that attractive. But why would any of these smart business people, find this talk of tariffs something for them to cheer about? The Peter Institute for International Economics, nonpartisan one of the ones that, you know, the conservatives like too, they estimated Trump's tariff policies would bring down the GNP by 9%. Now, how is that something for these business people, to be cheering about?
It doesn't add up to me there. He's clearly ignorant about economic matters.
Wait, so he's good at mathematics, which is like economics. I'm sorry, Eric, you were saying.
Well, no, I'm just saying that it is dismaying and flabbergasting that I get it when he's lying to people who are just out and, you know, he's talking to normal folks who don't follow the news that carefully. People who are successful in business are following things very carefully. They know about the effects of tariffs. They know they can read the projections. They can read the Wall Street Journal editorial page. They realize that if Trump is elected and it tries to implement some of these policies, it's going to be a disaster for the economy, much worse than if Harris is elected. And it is interesting. I mean, I think that this entire election is going to be won or lost on social issues. And if you count immigration as a social issue, which I kind of do.
Do you count this as a social issue, the economy?
No, I don't. I count that as more of a
economic issue. Yeah.
Economic issue, basic, you know.
But you don't think this matters then that much? Is that what you're saying, Eric?
No, I don't think it matters that much in terms of how people are going to vote. I mean, my guess is that these business people are thinking that, well, he's going to crack down on immigration, which, again, if you're in business, a lot of these businesses, one of the reasons that we don't have really strict rules about employment verification, if you want to hire somebody and you've got to make sure that they are here legally before you hire them, business doesn't want that, because business employs a lot of people who are undocumented, and that's what's keeping the economy going. And once you kick all those people out, you're going to have a real problem with wage demand, labor shortages that we already have, and so on. I think these business people all kind of know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really unclear to me what it is that they like about him. Except, he talks tough about trans people, I guess. I mean, I'm not sure where his appeal is to people who are actually following this kind of
stuff. It's interesting, though.
Am I remembering correctly that Mar-a-Lago employed undocumented immigrants at one time while he was still president?
I'd like to see the hotel or resort that doesn't. I'd like to see the construction firm or landscaping operation that doesn't.
Or restaurant, yeah.
This came up in the, I think it was the New Yorker interview, where they talked to J.D. Vance at some length, and they were talking about the mass exporting of all of these people, how you find them, round them up, and export them is almost beside the point. But they said, with your policies, we need these workers. Who's going to do all of the jobs that they do? And he sort of brushed that aside. He said that if we got rid of all of these people, and for the purposes of the point I'm making, I'm pretty agnostic about hiring illegal people that are not documented here that are taking jobs. I mean, everybody seems to know it, and it seems to be going okay. But Vance's point was that if they were out of the picture, other Americans would take these jobs, and they would pay real well. And somehow, by magic, that's not inflationary. But you know what I do then? It's sort of like Tim Walz said in the debate, I defer to the people who are experts. Like if I have a heart attack, I go to the Mayo Clinic. And 16 Nobel Prize-winning economists signed a letter in June saying that this would just reignite inflation. It would be disastrous to our economy. The Peterson Institute or whatever that organization keeps getting quoted. Moody's Analytics keeps getting quoted. Banks and brokerage houses keep getting quoted. It's like Wall Street is not behind this.
I just want to correct you. It's the Nobel Memorial Prize, not the Nobel Prize. For economics.
I had that guy on my show. So Pete's in my ear. My producer's in my ear going, well, Eric Zorn says that's not really the Nobel Prize. It's the Nobel, what is it? What's the name of the prize?
Nobel Memorial Prize. Alfred Nobel died in 1896, and he had the five categories that they gave, you know, physics, chemistry, medicine, peace, and literature. 1968, Swedish Central Bank decides they want to get in on the action, and they create a Nobel Memorial Prize. And all the headline writers and journalists seem to just get all confused and think it's equal to the other Nobel Prizes.
Why do you want to put an asterisk by the Nobel Prize for Economics that is consistently won by smart people at the University of Chicago?
Well, with all respect to them, there are certainly a lot of other areas, engineering, music, environmental science, math, even journalism would, I think, you know, Nobel's whole thing was he wanted to have prizes that added to, that gave the greatest benefit to mankind. And the funny thing about economics is there are all kinds of jokes about economists that they've predicted nine of the last five recessions they've predicted. Jokes like that. I mean, that it's such an inexact science, and they're really good at analyzing what has happened. They're really not very good at predicting what is going to happen, which is what a lot of physical sciences are like. Anyway, I mean, it just gets me that they created their own Nobel Prize and then give it out. So I don't know.
Speaking of recessions that were predicted and didn't happen, Trump left us on the brink of recession thanks to those crazy tax cuts. And Biden brought the economy back, does not get credit for that. And I think I've said this on the show before. Look at the cycles. That's what Republicans do. They drive up the debt by giving huge tax cuts to the richest Americans and corporations, and then they walk away and Democrats clean up the mess.
I just want to point out that the reason Austin Berg is not here to give us the Illinois Policy Institute's take on this is that he's in the air right now. He's still invited to the Mincing Rascals anytime.
Do you care to channel him right now, Eric?
I can't channel him on this, but I feel like, you know, we're all singing on the same page of the hymnal here.
Austin might have given us a little broader perspective, as he always does.
He says he'll be back next week. So
before we leave economics, can I just say that if the economics Nobel Prize is so great, how come the Freakonomics guys haven't won it yet? They should have. They're a lot better.
You read a little bit about what this guy's research in history was. His second book was translated into 41 different languages, and he talked about how government policy affects the economy, and economy reflects the government, and that the best political climate for economic growth is democracy. And it's kind of funny. After all that, you go, I think I could have come up with that. But but they do the research. And so congratulations to the trio who will share 11 million, I think it is, kronar, which comes to, for each of them, about $350,000. So that's a fine thank you. Okay, let's leave economics and just talk a little bit about dance parties. I push back on Eric's concern about Donald Trump dropping out of the Q&A that was going to happen at a town hall meeting this week and just decided to play his playlist and then dance. It was a listening party for 39 minutes. Eric, what was your observation about that moment on the campaign trail?
It was just really bizarre. Anyone who's not been paying attention, what happened was on Monday night in was Oaks, Pennsylvania, he was having a rally, and I guess the auditorium, the arena was pretty hot, and a couple of people fainted.
Yeah.
And so when they fainted, they called in medical personnel, and they stopped the rally and stopped the speech. And after those two people had been taken care of, Trump was supposed to be taking questions from the audience and from Kristi Noem, who was going to read the questions to him. And he just decided he wanted to play music.
Let's not do any more questions. Let's just listen to music. Let's make it into a music. Who the hell wants to hear questions, right?
And he asked for Ave Maria, and they played the instrumental Ave Maria. And he said, oh, let's play the Pavarotti Ave Maria. So they played that. And then they played YMCA and Hallelujah. And Trump is just standing there on stage. And it was just the weirdest thing I have ever seen at a political rally. And, you know, there's a lot of talk these days that Trump is not all there. And incidents like this really suggest that it's true. And also when you play clips of him talking, he just kind of rambles and it often makes no sense. And given that how diligently the public was after Joe Biden, the press in particular was after Joe Biden for his age and his slips and his little things that look like a little bit like dementia or senescence. We seem to be just whistling in the dark past the mental unfitness of Donald Trump.
The headlines were as much a point of entertainment as analysis. You know, Trump bopping to the music, somebody said, and dances during his, you know, I don't even call that dancing.
It was another kind of weave.
I agree. And I think the continued use of words like falsehoods or saying without evidence, why don't the headlines just say that he lies? There's, not to mention Eric's point, I'm just sort of building on that. They don't say enough about his apparent instability. They don't say enough about his lies. He's not being treated legitimately by the press. They're giving him a pass, and I just don't understand why. Everything Biden did, every time he took a pause, they thought, there he goes, you know, he's losing it. There was tons of coverage of that.
Biden had some legitimate but Biden had some legitimately troublsome moments, right?
He did.
He earned, so does that. Trump. So did Trump, but he's not getting the coverage.
They feel different to me.
I don't completely buy what you're selling here, Marge. A little bit. We all agree he's nuts. But I mean, I think back to Biden. The fact is the election season went on for a good, seriously 9 months of the major media enabling Biden and the Democratic Party to ignore what was going on with him.
How did the media do that? How did the media do that, Kate?
I mean, for instance, with a couple of the last videos of Biden kind of seemed to wander off from a group photo with some other.
Right. I remember that.
Public officials. And there were a couple of others the same week. And if you watched the complete videos, they did not make you feel better about President Biden at all. This is just one example. The mainstream press was, oh, this is a non-story. This is misinformation. These are clips taken out of context. And that was not the case. In addition, once Biden dropped out, everybody, all the mainstream media people were like, oh, yeah, we knew.
We knew that. Yeah.
We didn't want to say anything.
I don't fault the media for that so much as I do Team Biden. They were in the room. They knew what they were the ones that were shielding him. Every now and then we would get these glimpses. And I always thought it was hard to extrapolate from him momentarily wandering off the tarmac to what that really means.
The mainstream press could have explored that a lot harder.
Okay.
Months earlier. And they didn't. If they had delved into it and really not enabled his campaign the way they did, maybe he would have dropped out in a more timely manner.
I totally take that point. I think there was a magazine article or some mainstream publication published a rather lengthy, maybe it was the Journal, I can't remember, published a rather lengthy piece about a lot of the questions that insiders were having off the record about Biden. And places like MSNBC, my beloved MSNBC, they ripped that piece like, oh, too many anonymous sources, rather than saying like, yeah, we have seen this too. And
it was a Wall Street Journal, and they got ripped.
And you know, Kamala Harris, fingers crossed for her, of course, but she was part of that. She was the one saying, he is fed, he is ready to go. He is not ready to be president.
What is she supposed to do?
Well, it's a good question, but it's like you ask people to trust you and say you're an honest person, and then say, well, yeah, but I was lying about that. I know she's supposed to say that. She's got to say it, but the way the Democratic Party circled their wagons around this guy. I mean, imagine right now what this race would be like if it were Biden out there. I mean, I've seen him speak in the last few days, and he's just not ready to do this for four more years. I think he's had a good 4 years as president. I think history's going to be kind to him. But he would be getting clobbered. He was getting clobbered by Trump. So the Democratic establishment has got a lot to answer for here. And maybe they just felt that they couldn't talk Biden out of running, and they just had to go with it.
But, which is why Kamala had to continue to play the game, I think. I think those are all different players with different responsibilities.
Well, I'm not gonna hold it against her, you know, in any serious way. But to be honest about it, she was complicit in that as well.
Well, thanks for proving my point about the media obsession with Biden and difficulty in staying on topic to talk about Trump's problems.
Okay. So, well, all right, but Kate still technically has the floor. So your point, so getting back to Donald Trump, Kate, which is where you were going, I think.
There should be more specific talk about, is he mentally viable?
Trump.
Really specifically, yeah, Trump. The kind of articles we wanted, should have seen about Biden months earlier. I would agree with you. Now, those should be absolutely coming. I think now is the time when they should start doing that. But I don't think that I fault the media for not, for instance, constantly putting the word lie in headlines or something. I think they've been calling him out in general very, very well. It's really impossible to avoid that, even if you don't bother to read an entire article about him. You're constantly seeing the headlines. I'm remembering there was a long interview with the New York Times editor, Joe Kahn, and it was before Biden dropped out. And Biden would not do an interview with the New York Times, and Biden's people and the Democrats were really riding the New York Times for not being hard enough on Trump. And he was like, what? Do they read our paper? What else do they want us to say?
There's a semantic question about whether it's a lie if you actually believe it, right? And I think that Trump is delusional in a lot of ways. I mean, I think when he talks about tariffs, I don't think he's lying. I just think he believes something that's not so.
Yeah.
The same thing with the election. I mean, that's the perfect example of this, which is like, he really believes the election was stolen from him. So when we write, we can't say he lied that the election was stolen because he thinks it's true. What he's doing is he's saying something that is not factually supported, which is, I think, a clear way. I do want to agree with Kate that nothing that you can say about Trump anymore seems to have any impact. Nothing that he does or says seems to have any effect at all on the numbers in the polls, on voters. That he can say any damn thing that he wants. He's talking this week about sending the military after radical leftists in America. He keeps pushing this lie somehow that you can send your kid to school as a girl and then he'll come back as a boy, that they're going to perform surgery on him in school. I mean, there are just these outlandish, ridiculous things that he says, and it doesn't seem to matter at all. So continuing to point that out, especially in the New York Times, doesn't seem to do any good. I feel very frustrated by this, that the truth, those facts don't matter. It's
Don't you think, Eric, their obligation isn't to help or hurt Donald Trump? It is to, as efficiently and economically as possible, tell the truth. So if the word lie is true and is fewer words than said without evidence, then I wouldn't begrudge them the verb.
Well, it's a lie when he says that he built hundreds of miles of wall, for instance, in Mexico. That's just a lie. He's got to know that. I mean, that is not some sort of embellishment. That's just a lie. And he tells a lot of lies. But again, it is very frustrating that it doesn't seem to matter, that every little thing that happens to a Democratic candidate, everyone makes a big deal out of. Barack Obama wears a tan suit and people flip out. And Trump just spews nonsense and hateful rhetoric. And people go like, yeah, well, that's Trump. You know.
Let me take this a step farther. I don't quite share your adoration for MSNBC. I mean, it's entertaining, but I've got to confess, I don't watch it much. I think it's too extreme, and even not that I don't agree with it all, but I don't need to watch it. But what I do love with that same affection is NPR. And a couple days ago on Morning Edition, they interviewed Gordon Sondland, who was Trump's ambassador to the UN, who testified in his second impeachment trial that there was quid pro quo with the Ukraine. And then on January 6th, he said, I'm done with the guy. He was totally opposed after January 6th. Now he endorses him. And in the interview, the host brings up various questions like, but he said he's going to be a dictator for the day. Well, he doesn't mean that. I think what he really meant was you have to translate what he says. And they didn't challenge him on, wait a minute, what candidate for president is allowed to say what he doesn't mean and leave it to us to figure out how to translate it? How is that legitimate? And he also said, well, I changed my mind because Biden was such a disaster. And he did not document how he thought that was true either. But all these other third-party endorsers are allowed to go on with all these stupid excuses and how Trump and Vance still insist there was a peaceful transfer of power despite what happened on January 6th. And that's printed over and over again because they say it over and over
again. J.D., in that lengthy interview, was asked, the last four questions were, did Donald Trump lose the election? And then he said, let me ask you something about Hunter's laptop. And they said, do you think, and he says, I'm going to answer the question with the question. And then the interviewer didn't bite wisely and simply said, I'm going to ask you again, did Donald Trump lose the election? And then he demurred, and then they asked him again. He could not, would not say. And I think J.D. Vance, if Trump is delusional, J.D. Vance didn't win or lose the last election. He knows Trump lost, but he can't say it. I don't know if that's surprising to you. I thought that was spectacular.
That's what happened in his debate with Walls, too, right?
What's that?
Right.
Did that?
That he demurred. He didn't answer.
That he won't answer that
I'm
question.
Looking to the future.
Yeah. Well, I right. wanted to insert this also that, yeah, really, that if he says 1,000% tariff on China, which Eric alluded to, or 2,000, whatever the ridiculous number it was that he threw out there, reminding me of Stacey Davis Gates not meaning $50 billion when she said it. I do think there's no rules about how you want to propose something or campaign. We all know that he doesn't mean that literally. I'm not as worried about the truth of some things that are on their face so ridiculous they're false.
Well, the rhetoric, a lot of that rhetoric is dangerous. That's why it upsets me, because it foments anger and sometimes violence against transsexual people, against immigrants, for sure. Someone told me the other day, I was doing a canvas training, so we had a group of people, and they were upset about the whole Springfield Haitian story and how do we talk to voters about it if they bring it up at the doors. And someone said, they're getting memes that show Haitian immigrants actually biting into animals with fur on their faces. And someone in the group said, oh, that's probably AI. Probably AI. No, that's absolutely AI. No one eats like that. Do you eat a cow that way, biting through leather? Like, who thinks that could be real? But the people sharing that meme with the original speaker in our group sent it to her like it was real. So I am troubled. And then the violence turns back against Haitian folks all over the country and against migrants in general. So I think it's harmful. It's violent rhetoric. And I don't think anyone who purports to lead our country should be able to lie in a violent tone.
Just want to go back for a quick second to Trump's dancing for 39 minutes when they had those two medical emergencies. And then he said, oh, what the hell? Nobody wants to do this anyway. Let's just listen to some music. It was such a bizarre segue. I don't think that pointed, though, to his mental instability any more than anything for the last 5 years has been. He doesn't have the energy and maybe the focus that he at one point did, but I've never thought that he was especially mentally astute. Craziness is kind of his brand. So while that would have been disastrous for Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, the lunacy of that scene with Kristi Noem up there kind of clapping her hands along too, going, all right, we got to go with this. This is what the boss is doing. As bizarre as that was, I do give Trump a little bit of a pass. The USA Today called it a not slapstick.
Bonkers. Slap happy.
Slap happy. And I thought that, to me, it bespoke fatigue as much as it did instability. It's like, ah, screw it. What town are we in? Do I got to do this? Let's just listen to some music.
Well, there was the element of the people who were collapsing because of the heat. And he said in a cavalier manner, those people who went down, they were patriots, like they went down in a battlefield. And then he said, let's keep going. We'll play music. It's hot, but it's OK. You can stand it. And he carried on this lack of empathy. I think Harris is right about that. There's some psychological analysis that I'm not going to make, but other people do, that this lack of empathy, I guess I'll just say, I don't like that quality in a leader, and I wouldn't vote for somebody who throws paper towels at Puerto Ricans and then comes back and complains FEMA's not doing anything when they are.
You're going back to the paper towel toss to Puerto Ricans?
Oh, hard to resist.
A few years ago?
With FEMA, he's spreading these lies that FEMA is not helping people and discouraging them from applying. FEMA is begging them to stop doing it because it's tying up their resources, answering questions and insisting that help is available if you apply. So it's harmful, but it all ties, I think, to this lack of empathy and the fact that he just wants to get ahead any way he can. And to the extent it screws somebody else, even the voters, he doesn't care.
In the Google Doc we rascals share before our podcast, Kate went on a rant worthy of the Picayune Sentinel. She's exercised more than even me, and I'm the one who brought this up on the radio about the new stickers that will replace our tollway transponders here in Illinois. Can I quote from you, Kate, just briefly?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think we'll have to use the bleeper here. And capital letters, by the way. This is almost Trumpian the way she punctuated it. I pass transponder sticker.
Hey, that was a headline.
You're actually doing Eric's work here for him. And then you said, hey, this is public service and not politics. But I happened very serendipitously to hear John talking this morning about email he got from IPass, which said something about his transponder not being in the right place, seen on video 5 times by IPass's all-seeing cameras, and threatening him that they'd start charging him full price if the transponder did not get put in the right place. I say serendipitously because my guess is that, like many others, our household is suddenly getting hit with transponder stickers to replace our perfectly good old transponders, supposedly for our convenience. When I heard about this earlier in the year, I did the rational thing we all do, ignored it, thinking it might not happen to me personally somehow. But my husband got his transponder sticker, and I activated it last night via a QR code with these instructions to him. IPass wants you to put this on the windshield. Come, we will put our transponders wherever we want. Put it on the old transponder and hold it up as you pass through the tolls the same way we've always done it. Now it turns out IPass might penalize us for not affixing the stickers to our windshields. I call utter total b- The IPass website claims this is wonderfully convenient for us, glancingly mentioning that, like before, the transponder must stay with one car. A complete lie. We used to move transponders around all the time. And then you went on even more after that.
Well, it is a big fat lie, and we need to call it out as a lie. The media should say it's a lie, too.
Oh, that's right. This is not said without evidence, isn't it?
It's an absolute lie. My husband used to have to drive out to Burr Ridge, and he had to, you know, actually be constantly every day going through tolls, and we just had the one IPass transponder. So sometimes we would take it from his car and use it in my car to go someplace else. And so I know that they are lying when they claim that it was always necessary
right.
to be associated with only one car.
But we hold it up. We keep it in the little cubby in our car. Yeah. And then we hold it up and we go through because I don't like sticking it on my windshield. And I don't like them telling me I have to stick it on my windshield. But I wanted to say that I think we would all agree that what you and I are doing doesn't save us any money. One shared transponder is the same cost as two transponders, right? Because it only gets charged when the transponder goes through the toll.
They used to have a deposit.
They used to charge $10 right, for a deposit on the transponders. And eventually, I did get my own, and I had to pay that $10. You know, when they came out with these things, they said, you know, you can keep your old transponders. You know, don't worry about it. But, you know, wouldn't you like to have this nice sticker? You could have it if you want, but you don't have to. You can keep your old transponder. So I just thought, all right, fine. I'm just going to ignore this and keep my old transponder. And I also remember hearing, and I bet it was on your show, John. I'm sure I heard people earlier in the year saying, you know, I got a sticker and I'm not putting it on my windshield. I'm sticking it on something else.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Which is what I would do, because even if it wasn't just the his and her cars in a household, say you have friends come into town and they say, hey, we're going to go to Michigan. We're going to use the Skyway. Can I borrow your transponder? Granted, it'll cost you $15, but I mean, it was convenient for people, and it still is. Now you have to take your windshield out and hand it to somebody because the sticker is either stuck to the windshield or stuck to the car. Marge, you agree?
Can I introduce you to a product that's been on the market for many, many years called Sticker Shield? It's a two-sided...
They say that it will definitely get...
It's a two-sided thing. Like, are you still scraping your Chicago City stickers off the window with a razor blade?
I am.
It comes off pretty easily now.
No.
But
I bought the sticker shields and then I lost them. And then I forgot where I bought them.
They still sell them.
Yeah.
They still sell them at hardware stores. So you put that on the back of your sticker and it's cling material. It's not really a sticker. So then you peel it on and off, put it in whatever car you want. It is illegal to do that, so I'm not saying that I do that, but there is a product out there.
I don't know why they care. I don't know why they care about that. Like, when I went through, they said, we have video evidence that you didn't have it properly mounted. I thought, what the hell do you care how I've mounted my sticker or my transponder?
It's paying somebody to look at all these videos of people going through when the transponder is triggering the lift arm.
Yeah.
Transponder worked and paid the toll. And you're right, Eric. They've got someone looking anyway to see whether it was in the right place. That's crazy.
But I mean, I just think there's somebody or maybe a bunch of people whose job it is to look at videos of John Williams and his other scofflaw brethren going through the tolls. It's like,
well, they're coming after Kate now. Look out.
I feel like they're setting us up in what they're saying on their website now, because I went and looked. They're setting us up for the idea in the future that they really are going to hold this accountable to only one license plate. And if it's associated with another license plate, it's either not going to work or charge you twice as much.
Why?
So they're not doing that yet, but they're saying that that's how it works now, even though it doesn't. And they're claiming it always worked that way, which we also know is a lie. My assumption is that they're setting us up for that's how it's going to eventually work. And they want us to all accept that it really always worked that way.
But
it was totally 1984.
But what would the purpose of that be other than just to track your movements? Because if John gives his friends who are going to Michigan this transponder, then I guess the Illinois Tollway thinks that John Williams is going over to Indiana or Michigan when it's actually a friend of his. But now if they know that it's John's car because it's stuck to his windshield forever, that gives you some other bit of data. I can't figure out the logic behind that, because especially given that I believe the stickers are free, right?
The stickers are not free.
Yeah.
But the stickers are so they're not. It's not like it costs them any extra money. The transponders have been free for a while too, I think. At least you can get them replaced for free.
Yeah, that's true.
And so the whole purpose of, like, well, it's got to be associated with your car. I can't make an argument for why that matters unless it's data collection. I mean, yeah. I'm like the least paranoid person there is.
Kate's super paranoid.
I was going to say, but I was not going to be as paranoid as that idea that allows them to know for sure that it's your car and not somebody else's. So for tracking our movements.
Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe they had video. Of all the technology, what a waste to have video surveillance of the position of the transponder. Like, did they notice I had 50 illegal migrants in my car at the time with guns? They should have at least seen that. That would have been a better use of video technology other than somebody going, I think that should be 2 inches over. But I have been reprimanded by the tollway people that the idea of holding it up to the windshield when we go through, which is what we do. I know that sounds ridiculous. Like Marge is shaking her head. She can't believe we make this much effort or we make it this difficult for ourselves. But that's
I kind of like the sticker. Let me just say it's neater on the windshield, takes up less room. And the transponder, that Velcro stuff falls off sometime. Or if you do have a broken windshield and have to replace it, then you have to get more Velcro somewhere. And then you have to hold it up, which I think is a pain. I like the sticker. It cost me $3 at Jewel. You can get it free from the tollway, but yeah. I just walked over to Jewel and paid $3. And I'm a happy sticker customer. Kind of like that windshield sticker stuff.
See, I like keeping it in the little glove box thing next to me.
That's what we do.
On the rare occasion I'm going through the toll, I'm going to just pull it out and hold it up. And when you have to get your windshield replaced, the last thing you want is to also have to go replace a stupid tollway sticker.
I think I fixed that part of the problem.
I know. We're ignoring that, though. We're conveniently ignoring that, Marge.
If your windshield gets broken, then probably that sticker is going to get messed up, too.
I just got a cease and desist letter from Andy Rooney's estate.
You ever wonder why people... All right, hold on. The Rascals have more to talk about, but give me 30 seconds to talk about Ottawa, Illinois, the middle of everywhere, surrounded by open spaces, rivers, and trails. Ottawa is a natural setting that allows you to get outdoors and enjoy some fall relaxation. Settle down and snuggle up in one of Ottawa's nearly 400 rooms, everything from established hotels and resorts, private rentals, B&Bs. Plan your fall trip. Plan it today at visitottawail.com. Brought to you by Ottawa, the middle of everywhere, and the Illinois Office of Tourism. All right, now, back to the Mincing Rascals. March has an op-ed that will appear in Crane's Chicago Business this week.
Online today.
Online right now, so you'll be able to access it at Crane's. Let's just wrap it up with, I haven't seen it because it's just going up and I didn't know that. What are you opining about in Crane's?
Well, it's about the school board elections and how they have come down to two choices. You could go based on the money, because the money is being poured in to candidates that back charter schools and even voucher programs. And a lot of that money is coming from out of state, and including the California billionaire who runs Netflix. And the other one is the CTU. It's a tough choice. And if there's a third candidate you like, don't bother. It's just like the presidential race. You might really like Jill Stein or RFK, but you're throwing your vote away because there's only one of two candidates who are going to win. And that's now the way the school board elections look. And I honestly, while I stand, very solidly on the left, I disagree with a lot of progressives about the elected school board. And I think the accountability to the mayor is important. And when it was first granted in the 90s to Daley, I think schools were improved because there was accountability. And we certainly are looking at Johnson now to be accountable for the schools. And I think that is the best route we could take, is to hold that accountability. But besides that, a 21-member school board, That's a disaster.
I agree with you whenever you bring that up. I do think more than one school district and school board might be manageable. But the accountability of the mayor to the schools works how, Marge? Because he...
We elect him directly.
Yeah, but he's not in charge of the schools. He's in charge of the city. So what's the responsibility chain from the mayor to the running of the schools?
Well, wait a minute. He appoints the school board and the CEO of the school. So he is... in charge of the schools.
Got it. No, that's the answer to the question.
Right.
Right now, he's got this recalcitrant school board, or he did until they resigned en masse a week and a half ago. And he's got a CEO who's not going along with his plans to borrow $300 million.
Whom he inherited, right?
Mm-hmm. He inherited him, but he kept him on. He got rid of like Allison Arwady and a bunch of other people in Lightfoot's cabinet, but he kept Pedro Martinez, presumably after some long discussions with him about his goals, which Martinez said on Channel 11 a week ago that he shares most of Johnson's goals. He just doesn't share the way he pay for it.
Right. Martinez went along completely with the, Johnson plan to shift away from selective schools to the equity school funding. And he went along with Johnson wanting to have the school board also take away local schools' rights to decide whether or not they should have police officers as their resource, public safety officers in the schools. He went along with everything Johnson wanted, all the way up to this $300 million payday loan that Johnson wants him to take out. And also, of course, the issue of whether or not CPS or the city makes this $175 million
pension payment.
Yeah, right.
He went along with him all the way up until that.
My conclusion is, if I'm choosing between charter school lobby and the CTU, I back teachers. I have my own biases, being the wife of a retired teacher and the mother of a current teacher. And my kids went through public schools in Chicago. I believe in Chicago public schools, and I managed communications in two different times for CPS briefly. It wasn't an easy job, but I believe in teachers and having a grasp of what kids need and what schools need. And I also believe vouchers will decimate the school system. I look at studies, 75% in other cities of the families who take advantage of voucher programs are already in private schools. It's just a handout, taking money out of the public school budget and giving it to private schools. And I don't believe in that. I resent being forced to choose between those two candidates and two pockets of money. But when I do, I'm choosing CTU.
I'm with you on that, Marge. I'm with you, your position on privatizing schools, vouchers, and so on. And yet I am so turned off by the CTU and their allies, their approach to this election. And I was holding up for our Zoom audience here of four, these mailers that are going around saying that the candidates who are not backed by the CTU are expected to dance to Donald Trump's Project 2025 agenda. And then there's a picture of a candidate on marionette strings, that they're trying to tie anyone who is not with the CTU to Trump. And I just think that's toxic and unfair. And I've read the questionnaires and a lot of these things. And these people some of them are more open to school choice. Some of them are just into charter schools. And charter schools is an interesting topic. And I don't feel like these people are MAGA types. And the fact that they would use such campaign tactics really turns me off. And I'm also concerned that the mayor is essentially, he's a former employee of the CTU. He and Stacey Davis Gates, the president of the CTU, are really, really tight. That voting for the CTU candidates would only just reinforce the power that they now have. And I would really like to see on the board, I'd like to see like a form of divided government, a form of compromise where they're going to figure out, okay, we're not going to go all in with all the demands that the CTU has. And I also separate the CTU from garden variety teachers.
Yes.
I think a lot of teachers roll their eyes at some of the things that the CTU pushes forward, or their demands that they want, that they're asking for the moon. They want housing. They want all kinds of stuff that is really tangentially related to the classroom. And I understand the needs that are there, and I'm with you on that. But this election, it does it. I think you use the expression, and I did too, that you got to pick your poison between these mm-hmm. two sides.
I think the CTU gets.
I would say it's tangential because stable communities. Kids need stable communities and stable households, stable housing, enough food, all those things in order to learn. And the schools used to have these wraparound programs embedded in them. My husband taught for years in Uptown and in Englewood, and those programs were critical to the security of families and the safety of children. And when those were taken away because of budget concerns many years ago, communities are not as strong or successful. And, you know, people leave the schools get closed, and it's an ugly cycle. So I do agree that those are critical to good education program.
Right. I think they get out of their lane sometimes if the purpose of the Chicago Teachers Union is it's a union for teachers. Marge, I have a family member who's a CTU, CPS teacher, and I don't know how he feels about all of this, but I do think they may get him a pretty good deal. You know, I mean, they play such hardball. They ask for the moon and, you know, they settle for something just below it. It might be a good union in its advocacy for things for the teachers. But all this other stuff, I wish they wouldn't waste the capital on.
I obviously don't blame the union for trying to get the best deal it can for its members. But it is just its current leadership won by a very slim majority. So there are a huge percentage of teachers that, in fact, did not vote for this leadership and not like their tactics or necessarily everything they're asking for. But in addition, I'm all about the checks and balances. So like the way I'm looking at this specific school board election, let's remember, it's going to be 10 elected members that we're going to elect by district, and then it's going to be 11 members appointed by Brandon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already got the majority. Brandon Johnson, as we all know, used to work for the CTU. He basically, for all intents and purposes, in this situation, is the CTU. So CTU already has 11 seats on this board. So since I'm all about checks and balances, and I really do not think that the union should be controlling the school board, I want their input. I want strong input. I don't want them controlling it. So I'm looking at who's running in my district, and I am looking at the people who are not endorsed by CTU. One of them will be my pick, not CTU. For this specific purpose, this one election, mm-hmm. it's going to be somebody else. And I'm going to be a little less worried about how much in favor they are of charter schools, for instance, because I agree with you. I don't want to see privatization to the point that it's going to ruin a public school system. At the same time, I think we should not be just willy-nilly phasing out the selective schools or the charter schools.
Can you imagine what this 21-member board is going to be like if it's split, like, you know, 9 and 12 or whatever it's going to be? I can just imagine how crazy those meetings are going to be.
And city council. It'll be like some of the city council meetings.
City council and its worst days, or the U.S. Congress, you know, the House of Representatives, where they're just, you know, people are bitter and there's no compromise. And I really think we're going to come to regret a huge elected school board. But anyway, Marge, I'm sorry, I cut you off a little bit there.
Well, I agree with what you just said. And I want to go back, though. I know that I went from charter schools to vouchers. I was not talking about selective enrollment schools, and I don't advocate for getting rid of those in any abrupt way, for sure. But, you know, it was just last week that we heard from the Charter School Network. I think it was called Acero. I don't have it written in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
They're closing. Yeah, it is Acero. Yeah. They announced they're closing 7 schools in June, 2,000 students in such important underserved communities as Pilsen and South Lawndale that need stability. And there's nothing to stop them from abruptly closing, even though CPS cannot abruptly close schools. There's a moratorium and however you feel about that. And again, Austin is not here to speak his piece about that. So I know we're going to talk about this again, but I don't think the charter school should be allowed to just pull the rug out abruptly without any warning. In June, these seven schools will be gone. And so charter schools, we need to be very careful about as well. And I don't think they support neighborhood education. I think they cream off some kids who perform well and can tolerate whatever the rules are in their school. And the kids who need special ed and other things, they don't have to serve.
Somebody told me of those 2,000 students, as many as maybe 500 of them will have special needs. Let's not do any more questions. Let's just listen to music. Let's make it into a music. Who the hell wants to hear questions, right?
Let's dance.
Let's dance. Kate, Marge, Eric's got his
Eric's
fiddle.
Ready.
Eric, you know, it's funny because we can't play music for which we don't have license on the internet. At least we can't. But I think you could play your own instrument for us sometime. You could.
I could. Better yet, have my son do it. He's way better than I am.
Yeah. Well, I know you're good, and I know your son is very good. And by the way, Kate, how did your daughter's boyfriend's show go that you alluded to last week as we wrap it up here?
It was a great crowd over at the Cobra Lounge, and those of us who were over 55 didn't feel too out of place. It was just so much fun. Yeah. He really he has a way with his audience.
How long was the set? How long does his original music go?
I guess he played for maybe an hour.
Just for our listeners who want to search him out, where do they go? What do they type in?
He goes by Seb, which is short for Sebastian. And the easiest way to find him would be to say Seb and the word Seaside, because that was his first and biggest hit.
I was really impressed. After the show last week, I went and plucked some of Seb's videos off and posted them on this Picayune Sentinel as a promo. And I can repost those on the Picayune Sentinel for Thursday, because they're really good. And he's quite a talent. And it's nice that he's going to be in your family someday, fingers crossed.
That goes back to last week's conversation.
Well, he better. He's been going on family vacations with us for I don't know how many years now.
Well, I'm sorry to have missed it. You'll let us know next opportunity.
Yeah.
I'll send you guys a link for or maybe I can airdrop a video that I did.
March Halperin, and Kate Plies, Eric Zorn. I'm John Williams. Austin Berg will have something to say about some of the things we discussed here when he's able to join us again. We're produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
You guys just blow my mind. I just had no. Holding that thing up like when my Velcro fails.
That's what
I'm
we do.
So mad.
That's what we do.
I hate doing that. The stickers were just like.
I see the sticker.
I
did not know about sticker shields. I see that you've posted the link there. I'm going to order.
Yeah. Go ahead. I think we get them at the hardware store.
Anything to work around the all-seeing eye of the Tollway Authority.
That's it. I'm not going to be beholden to the man. I'm still going to hold up my sticker. I'm going to fix it to an apple.
Prison. Your city stickers, like all that with the razor blade and all that, they come right off. They're cling stickers.
They actually come off really easily now. They used to be a hard time to get off.
John, when they have you doing community service, picking up trash on the highway, I'll volunteer a guest host.
Thank you very much. All right. I'm talking to you people. Right. Goodbye. See you.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.